You know that feeling? That feeling that tells you something ain't right, something's off. Now, you get a feeling like that, you tell yourself, nah, just being negative, seeing the dark side. But hey, I'm a detective. The dark side is my beat. Breaking an entry, homicide, missing persons. Looking for shit in the shadows. That's what I do. That and looking for evidence, bringing in a suspect. Okay, so it's a slow beat in a half-assed town down the Jersey Shore. A desk job, mostly, has been for years. Petty crimes, old grudges, same old, same old. Still, evil can happen anywhere, even here. Case number 3684599, dated April, 10 years ago. This is the case that put us on the map quest. Yeah, added to our Wikipedia entry, got us Googled more times than I can shake a stick. And what do we get known for? That's right, evil. Like it's been said, the evil men do lives after them. The good is often interred along with their bones. That's Shakespeare. Julius Caesar, Act 3, Scene 2. Now, you wouldn't think that me, Chuck DeSantis, a detective working some godforsaken precinct down the Jersey Shore, would know Shakespeare. And, you know, back then you would have been right. Back then, I didn't know shit from Sherlock, let alone Shakespeare. But in 10 years' time, a lot can happen. Because here I am, quoting the bard, digging up bones, bodies, walking this story into the light like a perp. And hey, I ain't no Shakespeare. But by way of a title, I like to call this story The Absolute Brightness of Leonard Pelkey. Allow me to set the scene. It's spring, and the tang of ocean brine is wafting through the streets of this seaside town like nobody's business. Sun is shining, flowers blooming, and every fucking thing is on the rise. As usual, I am at the station, cooped up in my cubicle with a cruller and a cup of coffee. Big Marty Branahan, whose idea of an intercom is barging in and shouting information across the room, barges in and starts shouting information across the room. Hey, Chuck, there's a hot-looking lady and her daughter out there. How long you gonna keep them waiting? They're driving me nuts with their fucking chitter-chatter. Hey, Marty, how many times I gotta tell you, use the intercom or ping me when somebody's here? Chuck, how many times I gotta tell you, I don't know from pinging. I'm old school. I'm a techno peasant. When I started in this line of work, we communicated with drums and fucking smoke signals. Yeah, very funny, Marty. Show the ladies in and use the fucking intercom. How long are you gonna keep us waiting out there? Forget it, we're in. Come on, honey, come on in. That's my daughter, Phoebe. Oh, Ellen Hurdle. I own the hair salon down on Corliss Avenue near Eddie's Deli. Hair today. Hair today, it's the name of the salon. I thought maybe, never mind. Listen, we're here to report a missing person, okay? He's 14 years old. His name is Leonard Pelkey. That's P-E-L, are you writing this down? Write this down, P-E-L. She was what they used to call in my line of work, a dame. A steady looker with legs up to here, an impressive rack, and the kind of in-your-face attitude that could have you leaning up against the bar before noon knocking back shots at Johnny Walker. K-E-Y, you got that? Yeah, he's been missing 24 hours. What? Oh, 19 hours and 47 minutes to be exact. Oh my God, my purse. Phoebe, my purse. I left it on the chair out there. Just go get it. Oh God, I swear I'd lose my pancreas if it wasn't inside me. You know, which is not to say that Leonard is lost, okay? He's not, he's a missing person, it's different. Well, Leonard is my nephew. Oh, thanks a lot. Okay, so he's not my nephew. He's my brother's ex-girlfriend's son who came to live with us 2 years ago because the mother, the ex-girlfriend, she died. Long story, very sad. And my brother happens to be a total asshole and should not be allowed to care for a shih tzu, let alone a human child. Excuse my French. Hold on, I gotta get this. Hello? Hey, I'm Phoebe. I'm the daughter. Oh, that's my mom. Obviously. Don't mind her. She's just a local beauty stylist slash control freak. Basically harmless, unless, of course, you're her daughter, and then ta-da! Phoebe Hurdle, 16, going on 45. A kid, really, but you know, without the innocence you'd expect from a kid her age. I guess you could say she'd been around the block, but not all the way.
I bet you see a lot of dead people in your line of work, huh? Yeah, I see a lot of dead people in my mom's line of work, but they're all still alive. You know, walking around, having their hair done. When they actually do drop dead, they get laid out like on a beauty bed and made to look like they're alive. My mom sometimes does their hair. She charges double for the dead, which she doesn't like to do, but I tell her, considering you're giving them a look that'll last for all eternity, it's kind of like a bargain. Kathy, listen. Yeah, listen, when she made that appointment, she asked for frosted tips and a blowout, and that's what we charged her for. Okay, Kathy, I didn't know she changed her mind. Kathy, I know, but she didn't tell me, and I'm not a mind reader. Okay, listen, okay, tell her we run a full service salon, but we're responsible for the outside of a head only. I'm sorry, this is business, it'll only take a second. Phoebe, show them the picture. The picture of Leonard, the one on your cell phone, at the picnic. Oh, just show him.
Exhibit A, a JPEG of a boy. Slightly out of focus, but clear enough to see the blondish hair and blue eyes. Nice looking kid.
Doesn't show in the picture, but you should know that Leonard is totally weird. No, don't get me wrong, I like weird. I come from weird. I am weird, it's just, when weird goes too far, it's just becomes bizarre. And then, like, nobody wants to be around that. And I'm not even talking about the fact that Leonard is gay. Strike that from the record. We do not know that, okay? Not 100%. And besides, I'm sure Leonard would not appreciate us going around saying such things to total strangers. Wake up, Mom. It's the 21st century. No one cares. I care, okay? I care. Not that I got anything against the gays, okay? I love the gays. Now, my Uncle Paulie was gay, and I loved him. And he was so gay. No, he was gay like a village person. Oh, and so much fun. Oh, my God. Back in the day, he visited all the gay hotspots. Fire Island, Provincetown, Exit 35 on the Parkway. Arrested there 3 times. And he didn't go around talking about it all the time, okay? He didn't identify as a BLGT or whatever. You know, he was just himself. He was just Uncle Paulie. It's the same with Leonard. He's just himself. Oh, Kathy, I got to call you back.
At this point, the mother was off the phone, and I asked her a few more questions about the kid, you know, height, weight, when, Mrs. Hurdle, you okay?
Yeah. I'm fine. I was just remembering. A couple of weeks ago, Leonard, he comes to me and he tells me that my frosted pink lip applicator by Maybelline had outlived its shelf life. Said it was time to toss it, said it was passé. Yeah, then he gives me this. Glossima High Beam Gleam by Chanel. So thoughtful. I was so touched, you know, in my heart. I mean, what kind of a kid does a thing like that, right? What kind of a kid uses a word like passé? A gay kid?
I told him there wasn't much we could do until the kid was missing for a full 24 hours, but I suggested they might want to think about a poster. You know, I'd seen it work for dogs and cats and, you know, once for an escaped parakeet. You know, people see the missing whatever, they jogs their memory, they call.
What's the matter with you? You don't seem to understand the situation here. Does that kid look like a parakeet? Leonard doesn't know anyone in this town, okay? Except for me and Phoebe. Some of the customers in the salon. The kids at school, and the teachers, and the people over at Buddy Howard's School of Drama and Dance, where we signed him up for after school. But other than that, he's a total stranger in this town.
Okay, maybe you could start by telling me, who was the last person to see him?
I believe it was 6:30 when I offered Leonard a ride home. Something I often do with my older boys, but he refused, and toodaloo off he went on his own steam. And Really, that's the last I saw of him. Excuse me, detective, but I'm not a suspect here, am I?
Buddy Howard was the major domo of the famous Buddy Howard School of Drama and Dance. Now, I use the word famous in the local sense of the word, which is to say, unless you live within a 50-mile radius, you probably never heard of the joint.
I'm only asking because, well, early on there were some nasty rumors circulating about me, and I'd prefer not to stir all that up again. Well, if you must know, someone was going around saying that I was a pedophile. That's not exactly the sort of thing you can deny fresh out the box. Hello, my name's Buddy Howard. I'm not now, nor have I ever been, a pedophile. Oh. Yes, I believe in this country you refer to them as pedophiles. As if it's all done on foot. Now, I know there have been some raised eyebrows about this business of me offering rides to my older boys, but... Well, we've had some rather alarming incidents of late involving bricks and bats. You know, local ruffians. And, well, I'm afraid a boy like Leonard is bound to make himself into something of a target. Why? Well, have you met Leonard, detective? I see. Well, suffice to say that in all things, Leonard tends toward the theatrical, which, of course, is good news for us. We are, after all, a school of drama. But I'm afraid, out and about, they take a dimmer view of Leonard's brighter qualities. It's not every day you come across a child as, well, special as Leonard. And I don't use special in the Olympic sense of the word. No, Leonard has a real spark of talent. I don't think we were halfway through his intake interview when I turned to my wife, Sally, and said, I don't think I've ever met a child who could express himself so thoroughly with jazz hands. All I have to say is he'd better turn up, and soon. Well, he has one of the leading parts in our upcoming production of The Tempest. The Tempest. That's a play. It's by William Shakespeare. Yes, he's playing the part of Ariel, the fairy sprite.
Exhibit B, a pair of, well, fairy wings.
Yes, I'm afraid he was rather insistent about the wings, you know, wearing them. I tried to talk him out of it. I explained to him, you know, Ariel's not some sort of Tinkerbell that flits about getting preschoolers to clap their hands and believe in magic. But of course, Leonard was having none of it. He turned to me and he said, but Mr. Howard, what kind of a fairy doesn't have wings? And really, detective, what could I have said to that? Oh, there's Sally. Sally, dear. Sally? It's about Leonard.
Oh?
She's off with the tiny tappers. Sally teaches jazz, ballet, and tap to all levels, toddlers to teens. Oh, yes, yes. We've made quite a go of it, Sally and me. More ways than one. No, it's hard to believe now, but, you know, when we first opened the school, not a single parent would even discuss the possibility of entrusting their child to us. Well, I don't know, you know. We moved here to care for Sally's old mum, and, well, at the time I thought being a Brit would give us a sort of, you know, leg up among the locals. No. The opposite, in fact. I don't know. You know how people are. They don't like difference, do they? No, especially those people who are all the same. But here we are. Nowadays, they pay us to take their children off their hands. Sally and I joke about it. We like to call ourselves the premier after-school minimum security holding environment for the underage. Oh, would you like to take a peek at the theater? Right this way. Watch your step. This is it. This is where the magic happens. The theater. Seats 57, comfortably. Oh, do you like the set? The set? It's an island. Well, it's post-apocalyptic. I had the children gather all the materials from the wilds of New Jersey. To be perfectly honest, Detective, and strictly off the record, you know, teaching young people to act in a modern age is a thankless task. Very tiresome. You know, just when they ought to be learning how to hold hands, instead they're pressing their faces up against their handhelds. And while we're busy teaching them how to emote, they'd rather be emoticoning. That's why a boy like Leonard is such a treasure. Well, for one thing, he doesn't own a cell phone. And, you know, I believe this allows him to be more spontaneous, more open to everything around him. You know, his choices are always so surprising. His audition, for instance, Sally and I were absolutely gobsmacked. Happened right here on this stage. You know, he just stepped into a pool of light, began to flutter his little arms and fingers, worked his face into a hobbity grimace, and then had at it, the speech. I boarded the king's ship, now in the beak, now in the waist, the deck. In every cabin I flamed amazement. Sometime I divide and burn in many places. On the topmast, the yards and bowsprit would I flame distinctly, then meet and join. Jove's lightnings, precursors of the dreadful thunderclaps, more momentary and sight outrunning were not.
Now, the thing about a job like mine is you get exposed to all kinds of situations. Now, you got to be ready for anything. Like it's Wednesday and you're ready for your coffee and your cruller, and instead you get what? Shakespeare. Now, you got to stop and ask yourself, is there anything in this world more unexpected than a human being?
Detective DeSantis, call me. I just remembered something I forgot.
A few days later, I'm at the station catching up on some paperwork. You know, same old, when Chuck, that hot-looking lady's back again. You want me to show her in? Marty, how many times I gotta tell you? Intercom!
I left you a message. You don't call me back? Yeah, well, forget it. I'm here. Listen, I just remembered something I forgot about the day that Leonard disappeared. Could be important. He was wearing a pair of rainbow-colored platform sneakers.
I'm sorry, a pair of what?
Platform sneakers, rainbow-colored. He made them himself. He bought a half a dozen pair of flip-flops at Dollar Bob's, cut off the bit that fits between the toe, then glued each slab of flop to the bottom of a pair of Converse high tops. He was so proud. You should have seen him stumbling down the stairs and modeling them for us in the living room. He looked like a demented puppet. No, I said to him, I hope you're not planning to go outside wearing those things on your feet. He said he was, yeah. He said it was a fashion statement. I said, in this town, people who lie will take one look at those things on your feet and see them as an invitation to chase you down the street with sticks. But did he listen? No.
Buddy Howard organized the kids from the drama school to put up posters with Leonard's picture all over town. The mention of the sneakers was huge, 48-point type. By the end of the week, I couldn't take two steps without being reminded I wasn't exactly doing my job. And then, as sometimes happens, we caught a break. Exhibit C. One rainbow-colored platform sneaker.
Usually these binoculars are for bird watching. Also wildlife, you know, stray deer, lost possum, occasional coyote. I sometimes see the neighbors naked, but that's only in the summer months. And to be perfectly honest, Detective, they're never the ones you want to see in the buff.
Gloria Salzano lived in a big house on a lake not far from town. She spotted the sneaker floating on the lake and made a call to the station. The good news? The sneaker definitely belonged to Leonard. The bad news? Leonard wasn't attached to it. Just to cover my bases, I called a couple of underwater divers from the Atlantic City precinct and had them come down and search the bottom of the lake.
See the bubbles on the surface? That's how you know where the divers are. But I'm guessing this is not your first rodeo, huh?
Yeah,
mine neither. Hey, did you know my husband, Frankie Salzano? Frankie the Boot, they called him.
Yeah.
I don't usually go around announcing my husband's mob connections, but, you know, since you're law enforcement, I figured your pants might have crossed. Oh, after Frankie's first heart attack, I convinced him to retire down here to the shore. Our plan was to enjoy life, you know, shop the malls, fish the lake. And it's funny because, you know, the whole time we were enjoying ourselves, we had no idea there was this this dark spot growing unseen on his lung, the cancer. And that's what killed him. And I say it's funny because, you know, for years I worried myself sick he was going to die on the job. You know, get gunned down over a plate of spaghetti in some dive in Fort Lee. And instead, what happens? Now he dies the most long, drawn-out, ordinary death, and in his own bed, no less. Just goes to show you, you never know. And you don't know what you never know. So, you know. Oh, and just so you know, I always kept my nose out of my husband's business. Oh, yeah, I didn't want to know. No, I seen these shows, these reality TV shows about mob wives. Oh, please. No, we were never that way. We dressed like ladies. We were church going. We didn't use swear words, and certainly not on TV. No, we turned a blind eye. We kept our mouths shut. But like I always said to Frankie, there's a reason God gave me two ears and only one mouth. So I could hear twice as good as I talk. Which is to say, I heard plenty. Enough to know. Can I ask you a personal question, Detective? Do you believe in hell? No, I'm just asking because, you know, not too long ago, the Pope, he did away with limbo. And I'm thinking, you know, hell can't be far behind. And I'm wondering, well, what's going to happen to all those evildoers who've been down there since God knows when? I mean, that's a lot of people. Read the newspaper. And it's not just those people who did bad things. No, it's also those people who didn't say anything when bad things happened. Just went along with it, letting it happen day after day. What happens to them? Where the hell do they go? Oh, I know. I don't believe in it neither. But still, you never know. It's lucky I was still here. I mean, to see the sneaker. No, I'm just saying I'm planning on selling the house, making the move nearer the city, closer to my grandkids and all. Yeah, it's time. But you know, I can't seem to get myself motivated. You know, I don't know. I start making plans, you know, I pack my stuff in boxes, I call the realtor, but something always comes up. Like a sneaker. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. Oh, something. Oh, my God.
I'm not the type to give bad news over the phone. I drive up to the house, give them time to see my car, ring the doorbell, wait for someone to answer the front door. By then they know. You know, words are just a formality. Words make it real, final. Once inside the house, I get them to sit down. I know which way this goes. There's gonna be tears. There's gonna be anger. And there's gonna be a call for blood. At this point, I like to pretend I'm on TV. Law and Order, some cop show. I'm Just an actor saying lines from like a script. I give it to him straight, no bullshit. Like in this case, I say to the mother and daughter, we still got to do an autopsy, but the cause of death is clear. A quick, clean blow to the head with a blunt object. Definitely homicide. Then whoever done it wrapped him in some netting. They tied him with rope, weighted him to an anchor, and dropped him in the lake where he's been waiting for us for over a week. I promise him, we're going to do whatever we can to find the person or persons who done this thing. And then I tell the mother, we're going to need you to come down to the station tomorrow and identify the body. I suggest she ask somebody to drive her to the morgue, someone to offer a shoulder. So the next morning, I'm sitting in the waiting area of the morgue. The coroner guy hasn't shown up yet, so it's just me and Marion Tochterman. She's a high hair redhead, a customer of Hair Today, who agreed to be a shoulder.
You think they mind if I smoke?
Really?
I don't see what difference it makes. Everyone here is dead.
Present company excluded.
Well, how about if I just take a puff and put it out before the guy gets here? This is not the moment to go cold turkey. Smart to make Ellen wait out in the car. She wouldn't have been able to handle it. Well, for starters, the lighting. It's brutal. They say it depletes your vitamin C. Not to mention your will to live. And the decor?
Oh.
Let's just say the Soviet Union comes to mind. And not in a good way. Listen, just so you know, I'm not going in there to view the body. I don't want to remember Leonard like that. I want to remember him the way he was, alive. You didn't know him, did you? No. You know how we met Leonard and me? Last summer. I was at the local CVS browsing the decongestants. And I happened to notice this kid standing at the end of the aisle, just staring at me. I'm like,
what?
And then he walks up to me, points at me, and he says, 1985. Well, the kid don't look more than 12 years old, so I know I didn't meet him in 85. Then he tells me he's got this theory how he can always tell a woman's heyday by her hairdo. He says, a woman hits on a moment in her life when everything falls flawlessly into place. You know, happy ever after, love everlasting, all that. When it fades, as it inevitably must, the hairstyle stays. She repeats it over and over, like forever. And I'm thinking to myself, 1985. Morty was still alive then. The kids were living at home. The house, the car. Oh, we were living the life. I hadn't changed my hairstyle since. Leonard, he leans in, hands me a card for the salon. He says, come by and see us. We'll bring you up to date. That's the thing about Leonard. He saw us. Not the way we were, but the way we hoped to be. It's like a superpower he had. Anyway, I make an appointment. I go to the salon. I got my head in the sink. Leonard's giving me a shampoo. He leans in real close, his breath fresh as a tic-tac. And he says to me, Mrs. Tochterman, beauty may be in the eye of the beholder, but would it kill you to give them something to behold? Then he holds up my new hair color, Raspberry Creme by Clairol. I was like a new person. The one I always hoped to be. I suppose there'll be a funeral, huh? At least I got something to wear. Now, about 6 months ago, Leonard, he started pestering me. Started pestering all us girls. He tells us we have to have at least one little black dress in our closet. He tells us it's de rigueur, which I believe is French for have to. He tells us we need a little black dress for when we get invited to cocktail parties and the like. I pulled him aside. I was like, cocktails? Honey, these girls, they're more the white wine and Lexapro crowd. You know, and parties, you know, most of us haven't been invited to a party since Reagan. He's like, who's Reagan? I didn't want to get into it. And then he tells me, Mrs. T, here's how it works. If you had a little black dress, you would get invited to parties. So I bought the dress. Ann Taylor, $129 on sale. Of course, the irony is, where's the first place I get to wear the dress? Exactly. I'm gonna miss that kid. Something else. You know, I tried to warn him. I did. I told him, tone it down. You know, the nail polish, the mascara, maybe not so much. He said he was just being himself. All right, fine, be yourself. But do you have to be so much yourself? He said if he stopped being himself, then the terrorists would win. How do you argue with a kid like that? That's the thing, you can't. Not anymore. He's gone. You know, everybody always says everything happens for a reason. I don't believe it. Though I do believe you gotta find a reason for everything that happens. But this murder of this boy and so young, I'm trying to find a reason, but honey, I keep coming up empty-handed.
The night before the burial, a hard, heavy rain hit the town. But by the next morning, the sun came out and the clouds parted like something out of the Bible. At the cemetery, an army of women wearing little black dresses were tramping through the damp grass on their way to Leonard's grave. Even before the service began, the soles of their fancy shoes were soaked straight through, and their made-up faces were badly streaked from crying. But then everyone was pretty broke up. You know, shopkeepers, school teachers, the kids from Buddy Howard's School of Drama and Dance. Father Cavanaugh was just wrapping up his mumbled prayers over the open grave, giving Leonard one last hit of holy water when,
could I have everyone's attention, please? Can you hear me in the back okay? I was gonna say something at the church, but then last minute I chickened out. And, well, now it just feels too tragic to leave Leonard lying in a pile of dirt without someone saying something personal over him, so. Here goes. As many of you know, I was never a big fan of Leonard's. When he came to live with us, my life became a living hell, practically overnight. At school, I was forced to step in and defend him on a daily basis, which was so not fun. He did not add to my popularity, not one iota. In fact, the opposite. Most of the time, I felt like an outsider. A pariah, a freak by association. Sometimes I wished that he would go away, like seriously go away, like, you know, forever. But I never imagined this. Before Leonard came to live with us, he had a pretty rotten life, and even afterwards, it wasn't all that great. But I never met anyone who was more determined to make the best of every situation. When I tell you that he could make a silk purse from a sow's ear, I mean that literally. He gave it to me for my last birthday. It was like totally gross, but also kind of amazing. He could do a dead-on impression of Julie Andrews. He could totally dance like Britney Spears. He could play a mean hand of poker. He made the most delicious pancakes I ever tasted. He knew how to dress a salad, and also all the women of this town. P.S., y'all look really awesome. I'm only sorry that Leonard isn't here to see you. But then, I guess there's a lot he's gonna miss. He'll never know what it's like to have chapped lips from kissing way too much. He won't get to invite some equally geeky boy to his senior prom. He'll never have a broken heart. He didn't live to see his first apartment or his first job or maybe even his first child. Who knows what kind of life he might have lived. Once Leonard told me about this theory he had about how the world is actually this glowing, pulsing web of fiber optics connecting one person to another. I know, he was so not normal. He said that the stronger the bond between two people, the brighter the strand. And the more strands there are, the brighter the overall glow of the world. Okay, I told him point blank, the world did not look all that bright to me. But with the shrinking polar ice caps and war and famine everywhere, and all kinds of disasters and diseases happening way too often, not to mention the possibility of like total nuclear annihilation, things were looking kind of dim. He said that maybe it was me. Maybe it was the way I was looking. Okay, so I'm not saying that Leonard's theory is true or even that I believe it. I just know that for me today, when I look around, the world looks better, brighter because of him. That's it. My mom wants to remind you, you're all invited back to the salon for bagels and coffee. What? Oh, okay. And the kids from Buddy Howard's School of Drama and Dance are gonna be singing. Huh? Okay, they're gonna be singing selections from what is it? From the Roberts and Hammerstein songbook.
After that, we all just stood there, quiet. No one checking their cell phone. Nothing to post or plan. No one trying to be more or better. I took out my little black book and I made myself a note.
Shotzi, stop with the barking. Hold off then, Van Gennich. You must excuse Shotzi. Shotzi, enough! Shoo! You must excuse Shotzi. We don't see so many customers these days. Time was when all clocks had faces, hands. You could see the whole sweep of a day in one look. Now what do we get? The moment, digital, fidgety, on your computer, on your cell phone even. I tell you, they're killing time, also my business. But enough about me, what can I do for you?
I stopped by the clock repair shop on Main Street, a place where time itself seemed to have stopped dead sometime last century. Otto Beckerman was the go-to guy if you had a broken cuckoo clock or antique pocket watch. Exhibit D. We found it in Leonard's pants pocket the day we pulled him from the lake.
Yes, yes. I know this watch. Yes, I gave to him this watch. No, no, it is not a usual thing for me to do, but then Leonard was not so usual a boy. That first day he came into my shop, it was for me a surprise. He came in through that door, bright eyes, out of breath, like a Hitchcock starlet. Said he was escaping. Shotzi was barking her head off, but Leonard was not afraid. I think for Leonard, he was more scared to be beaten up by bullies than he was to be bitten by an old dog with no teeth. I made him some hot chocolate. Oh, do you want hot chocolate? I can make for you a coffee, maybe. No, no. Sit. He sat in that chair, blowing on his hot chocolate. He was wearing the short pants. And mind you, it was winter time. No, not short shorts. Shorts to here. Pink and green plaid. Capri pants, he called them. He asked me, do you know why they call them capri pants? Oh, I don't know. I tell him, I don't know, maybe has something to do with the Isle of Capri. No, he tells me. Capri is short for capricious. You see, even when he's not here, he makes me laugh. After that, he often stopped by my shop on his way home from school. Sometimes I would make him read to me from the David Copperfield by Charles Dickens. And sometimes I would read to him while he acted out the parts with hand puppets. Puppets he made at home with real human hair. Like I said, there was nothing usual about Leonard. No. To see a boy like that in this world, in my shop, with no apology, was to me a miracle. When I was a younger man, you understand, no boy like this was allowed to exist. Fathers beat it out of their sons long before they came to the schoolyard. Fathers were the bullies back then. I know, I was one. Now, my son, Richard, I told him it was for his own good when I found him downstairs in the basement, dancing the ballet, or wearing the lipstick, or playing with his sister's dolls. I tried to shake the daylight from him. But that is the problem, you see. You cannot shake it. The daylight, it comes again. I don't think Richard could ever forgive me for trying to make him into something he was not. Oh, no, he's passed away. 1992. So long now. That's why a boy like Leonard was to me a miracle, a second chance, you see, to get it right. These days, they say it is a different world. Boys like Leonard are allowed to exist. They run around in capri pants, wear eye makeup even. But still they get chased by bullies. And still, I'm sad to say, they still sometimes get drowned in the lake. Oh, did you know that he stopped by here that last day? Yes, here. But I was too tired. Leonard, he could be a lot of work. I made him take Shotzi for a walk, and then I shooed him away. Come back tomorrow. Tomorrow. Oh, I just remember. He left something here with me.
Exhibit E, Leonard's school bag.
I was going to give it to the family. Maybe you could. Can I keep it, Detective, the watch, to remember? Ah, yes, evidence. No, usually I am not so nostalgic a man. Look around. I live in time. I know which way it goes. But I tell you, if I could just this once, I would turn back every clock in this shop just to have a chance to say to Leonard, don't go so quick. Sit with me a while longer. Stay.
Inside the school bag,
Exhibit F, one black and white composition book, the kind kids use in school, or used to use. In an age where blogs and tweets and Facebook posts announce every minor moment in every kid's not-so-private life, a book like this is a throwback to another time, a time of handwriting and rants and riddles, poems, lists and doodles, and drawings of dresses and hairdos. And there, right there, in Leonard's own handwriting, the name of 10 boys who claimed gave him a hard time, along with a list of their alleged crimes. I start at the top of the list, Kevin McDonough. And as he's talking, I'm thinking to myself, well, that's me in middle school. You know, being a bully, keeping kids in line, same old, same old. But by number 5, Corey Brennan, I'm wondering, what is it about a kid who gets chased and jumped and slammed into his locker on a daily basis and still insists on being himself? By number 8, Tony Greco, I'm pissed because nobody should have to put up with this kind of abuse. And by number 10, Travis Lembeck, I'm ready to knock heads. But instead, I stuff down the anger. I stick to the script. And I say to the Lembeck kid, well, why don't you just start by telling me what happened at the mall? The mall? Oh, nothing happened at the mall. Okay. So me and this kid, Kyle Calzone, you talk to Kyle yet? Oh, you definitely ought to talk to Kyle. He'll back me up 100% here. Me and Kyle, we was...
Right there.
Oh. No. Yes. Oh, me and Kyle, we was hanging out and up to nothing at the mall. We spot this kid flitting in and out of stores with Christmas shopping bags. He's wearing those sneakers. And on his head, get this, a beret. Cherry red. Kyle feels all sorry for the kid. Says we ought to educate his ass about his clothing options. You know, we stop him. We hardly said 2 words to him when, get out of there. We hardly said 2 words to him when he starts in about how me and Kyle ought to be working backstage at his little theater show. Dude, I told him, it's never gonna happen. I mean, Jesus, just the thought of me and Kyle standing quiet in the shadows while that kid skips around in a spotlight. Wake up, Kyle tells him. This isn't Disneyland, it's fucking Jersey. Oh, excuse my language, detective, but them's Kyle's words verbatim. Oh, fuck. Sorry. Anyway, we walk on. The kid comes running after us. He wants to show us his prized possession. Now, this thing his dead mother gave him 2 Christmases ago when she was still alive. Exhibit G, Leonard's lucky money clip. And I don't know, just to be a dick or whatever, Kyle, he grabs the money clip, starts playing keep away, teasing him is all. Me, I'm trying to convince him, give the kid back his money clip, because, hey, my mom's dead, too. I don't got shit to show for it. What are you doing in there? Oh, okay. Hold on. So anyway, Kyle, he finally gives me back the money clip, and I'm about to give it to the kid when Phoebe, the kid's cousin or whatever, she's suddenly all up in my face, saying how she don't get the money clip back by the count of 3, I'm gonna be dead meat. I'm like, this can't be happening. It's like a dream, you know the kind? The kind where your cat starts talking smack about your next door neighbor. I mean, you hear the words, you see the cat's mouth moving, but it don't add up, right? And I say as much to Phoebe, and since when do girls go around talking shit? 1, she says. For real, I says? 2, she says. Like, I should be all impressed that she could count. Then Kyle jumps in. He says, wait, hold on. I just got 1 question for you, girlie. You queer, too? Well, you should have seen her face fall. She was, like, shocked as shit. But, hey, Kyle, he just meant it as a joke, right? But Phoebe, she don't always see the humor in things right off. And I was about to explain it. 3, she says. Then, I don't know, maybe to prove to me she's no way a lesbo, she steps up and kisses me hard on the mouth. I'm like, what the fuck? The kid, he drops his shopping bag, he lets out a girly squeal, but hey, it's my turn to be shocked as shit because, get this, me and Phoebe, we are making out right there in front of the candle corner. Don't blame me, she's the one who started it. But wait, here's the thing. While I'm leaning in with my tongue all up inside her mouth, Phoebe, she slips her fingers into my peacoat pocket and pulls out the money clip. She's got huge balls, that girl. Which is maybe why I like her. I mean, she's not afraid of nothing. Except maybe her mother. And that's understandable. What? Oh, shit.
What? Okay. Okay, in a minute. It's my dad. I gotta drive him to the doctor before he gives himself a cardiac arrest. Look, detective, I'm sorry about what happened. I mean, the whole town is torn up about it, but the mall, that's just the kind of shit that happens to a kid like Leonard Pelkey on a daily basis. You know, the price you pay for being different in a town like this. You know, some people dress weird to get attention, right? But not Leonard. Nah, he was different, but he was different from the inside out, if you get my meaning. Now, I think when people go around saying stuff like boys will be boys, I think what they're really trying to say is boys ought to be boys. Hey, I'm not saying it's right. It's just the way it is. Now, you want to believe that people are basically good, right? Decent. Just trying to get through the day as best they can. But one thing I learned, evil doesn't happen a la carte. It needs someone to serve it up. An evildoer, as Gloria Salzano might say. And speaking of Gloria, she makes a second appearance in this story, very brief. Something had been weighing on Gloria's mind since we pulled Leonard from the lake. She called the station. When I showed up at her house, she had these bits of rope laid out on her dining room table. I was like, what is this, magic tricks? Oh, don't be silly, what do I know from magic? But I do know about knots. Knots, you know, the kind you tie. And, well, I happened to notice that the knot that was tied around the boy's middle was different from the knot that tied him to the anchor. Here, let me show you. Now, the first knot was a simple kind of a knot, the kind anyone would make, slapdash, to tie a shoe, whatever. But the second one, the knot that tied him to the anchor, well, that one was fancier, slip-proof, the kind a fisherman would use to bait a hook, what we call a Jancic special. So, what I'm saying, detective, is I think you're looking for two people, and one of them knows something about fishing. So we had a lead, not much to go on, but enough to keep us busy. Marty, bring in those files.
Hey, Chuck.
What?
Use the intercom.
For the next few days, me and Marty, we flipped through files of fingerprints and online arrest reports, cross-checking them against fishing permits dating back to like 1987. And then from out of the blue, we get a call from Phoebe. She's at the 7-Eleven on Route 33, breathing hard, quietly crying. I jump in my car and I drive down there to see what's up.
No, I'm fine. I'm fine, I'm sorry. I just didn't know who else to call. Promise you won't tell my mom, okay? No, promise. Okay, so there's this boy that I've been kind of dating, and today he invited me over to his house after school, and hey, I'm not the kind of girl who gets invited over to boys' houses after school, so I said, yeah, sure, whatever, I'm game. When I showed up, he was upstairs in his bedroom, sitting in the glow of a virtual landscape. Me, I'm standing over him, watching as American soldiers race back and forth, and boom, 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 one by one, he blows up the soldiers. I could tell by his dead-eye stare that he's really into it, and I'm about to go, and he tells me he's been thinking. Maybe it'd be best if him and me, we didn't get too attached, on account of the fact that as soon as he graduates, he's out of here. He wants to join the army, says he's gonna rack up some real-life kills on a real battlefield in real time. And right then I realize, I don't know this guy. He's a stranger. And the boy that I've been crushing on is just someone I made up and wanted to believe in. You know, like those life-size cardboard cutouts of ex-presidents and movie stars that you stand beside and have your picture taken so you can feel all better about yourself. And in that moment, my made-up boyfriend just disappears. His too cool attitude, his tobacco-tasting kisses, his upper arm and torso tight against his t-shirt. Boom, 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 all of it's gone. And it's just me standing alone in a room with a boy who wants to kill someone. I have to go, I tell him. And that's when it happens. Out of the corner of my eye, I see it on his dresser top, catching the light. It's Leonard's money clip. How'd you get this? I ask him. He tells me Leonard gave it to him as a present, but why? Why would he part with the only thing he had of his mother's? Something he always kept in his pocket, and why would he give it to you? You of all people. And that's when I turned and I grabbed the money clip. By this time, Travis is up on his feet, and he takes hold of my upper arm and spins me around and pulls me toward him, and I push back hard, and he goes crashing into the corner. His collection of fishing rods come tumbling down on top of him, and that's what gave me time to get out of the room and out the door and down the stairs two at a time and out the front door, and I ran and ran and ran until I was, like, totally, boom, gone.
After that, it was pretty much connect the dots. And all the dots led straight to Travis Lembeck. Kyle Calzone caved, came clean in exchange for a lesser charge of accessory to murder and the promise to try him as a minor. On the advice of his lawyers, Travis pleaded not guilty to the charge. Reckless manslaughter, second degree. At the trial, Travis never took the stand. His defense claimed that that night out there by the lake, Leonard had put the moves on Travis. They presented Leonard as a sex-crazed kid, intent on getting his first taste of it with an unavailable boy. They said that Travis had no choice but to strike back in order to protect himself. They called it gay panic. We called it a load of crap. But still, as evidence, they presented Leonard's makeup, his platform sneakers, even his fairy wings were dragged into the courtroom, proving beyond a reasonable doubt that his lawyers were assholes of the first degree. Didn't take long for the jury to find Travis guilty as charged. All that was left was the sentencing. Judge Gamble reached out to Ellen and Phoebe, told them that as Leonard's family, they'd have an opportunity to make a statement in court. It was up to them if they wanted to do it.
Are you kidding? No, thank you. I am sick to death of being depicted by failed artists who have part-time jobs working as quick sketches for TV news channels. Now, who are these people? All the time they make me look like a hag. Don't they understand I got a beauty business to run? Here, do me up the zipper. But Ma, we're the only family Leonard has. If we don't stand up for him, who will? Enough, okay? It's time for us to move on with our lives. Make a fresh start. Although at this point, in terms of a fresh start, I think the best we can hope for is some sort of natural disaster, and everyone in the whole town is wiped out except for us. Well, what if I stand up and say something? No!
The day of the sentencing arrived, the whole town was like a circus. TV news trucks were lined up three deep in the parking lot. Bible thumpers were out there shouting shit about God knows what, and gay rights activists were waving a big-ass rainbow flag. And inside the courtroom was even more nuts. People were literally hanging from the rafters. But when Ellen Hurdle walked into that courtroom, wearing her little black dress, her hair done up and smelling like a really thick fashion magazine, everyone just shut the fuck up. But once things got underway, she really surprised everyone by standing to address the court.
Thank you, Your Honor, for the opportunity to talk. I wasn't going to say anything, but driving over here, I remembered something I learned from Leonard. He taught me that people could do all kinds of things they didn't think they were capable of. So with your permission, Your Honor, I'd like to say a few words to Travis here.
Major hubbub broke out in the room. The judge banged her gavel and called for order in the court.
Hey, Travis.
The kid looked up surprised by the sudden attention, and it was weird, because for the first time since the trial began, someone was talking to him instead of about him.
You want to know the truth? I was disappointed to find out the state of New Jersey doesn't offer the death penalty. I'm not proud of the fact that I wanted to see you suffer in the worst possible way. Life sentence seems like letting you off easy. Now they tell me you get maybe 25 years at most. 25 years. And I'm just wondering, Travis, do you think that's fair? Do you? Past few weeks I've been sitting here listening to your lawyers talk about Leonard in ways that, if they weren't so mean, they would have made me laugh out loud. A lot of what they said was downright lies. You know that, right? But over and over, they kept bringing up this one point, and I have to admit they were right. They kept saying how Leonard was too much. And he was. He was too much. But they kept saying it like being too much yourself was the worst sort of crime. A crime worse than even murder. And I'm guilty of it too. Over and over, I tried to warn him. I told him, tone it down. You know, his behavior, the clothes he wore. We were afraid for him. Afraid of what people like you might do to him. But standing here now, looking at you, I realize you were afraid of him. Maybe so was I. You know, maybe we all were. Maybe that's why we tried so hard to convince him to be less himself. Look, Leonard was no picnic. No one knows that better than me. But he's gone now. Turns out we didn't get enough of what we once thought was too much. Travis Lembeck, I can never forgive you for the evil that you've done. But earlier today, I was thinking that maybe the whole purpose of evil in this world is to get people to stand up and, you know, be better. Maybe without evil, the just people of the world, the people who are going along, living their lives, minding their own business, and maybe they'd never find the courage to come forward and do the right thing. And the right thing to do today is to stand here before this court and say that Leonard Pelkey was a good person. He changed my life. He changed all our lives. He made us believe in goodness again. And even you, Travis, despite the evil that you've done, even you can't take that away from us. I won't let you. Thank you, Your Honor. That's all I have to say.
The judge gave Travis Lembeck the maximum sentence, 25 years in the state prison. Whether or not Ellen's speech had any effect on the outcome of the trial, we'll never know. But I'll tell you this, it wasn't the force of evil that made Ellen stand up in court that day and be a better person. No, it was Leonard. According to the autopsy report, Leonard was 5'4" tall. But head to foot is no way to measure a human being. Because after Leonard disappeared, he was everywhere. Not just on the evening news and in the papers, but on the minds and in the hearts of every person in this town. Whatever that kid brought into this world, he managed to pass it along to Ellen and Phoebe and Buddy Howard and Marion Tochterman and Otto, the guy at the clock shop, and they in turn passed it on to me. And I guess it's my job to pass it along to you. So on and on it goes. The absolute brightness of Leonard Pelkey.
Chuck, what are you doing out there?
I'm finishing up. I'll be there in a minute. We're married now. Me and Ellen. More evidence of how Leonard changed our lives. I quit the force. I figure there'll always be shit in the shadows. It's better for me to try and live in the light for a change. I run a roofing business out of our garage, a crew of 10 guys. Some days I stand on a rooftop looking out over this
half-assed town, and I think to myself, not bad, DeSantis. Not bad. We never did find out why Travis Lembeck killed Leonard, and I guess we never will. But, like it's been said, there are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in our philosophies. That's Hamlet. Act 1, Scene 5. Oh, did I mention the fact that I am appearing in the upcoming community theater production of Hamlet? Yeah. I'm playing the part of Polonius. Now, I said to Buddy Howard, I don't know shit from Sherlock, let alone Shakespeare. He told me it's never too late to learn something new. So here I am, quoting the Bard. And I'm dedicating my performance to Leonard. This above all, to thine own self be true, and it must follow as the night the day, thou canst not then be false to any man.
Chuck, we're gonna be late!
I'm coming! I gotta go.
Margaret.